Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. It appears as if a week is a bloody long time in South African sport, yeah? Last Friday, Bafana Bafana coach Stuart Baxter resigned in dramatic fashion at a press conference held at the Kinlani Country Club in Johannesburg. And it came just a day before the new Premier Soccer League season officially began. And what a weekend it was. There were wins for the traditional Big Three, Kaizer Chiefs, Orlando Pirates, Mamelodi Sundowns. Chiefs defeated Highlands Park 3-2 in a game that saw the resurrection of one Lebohang Manyama, former Absa Premiership Player of the Year. While Pirates swept aside Bloemfontein Celtic 3-1 at Orlando Stadium. And Sundowns beat Tswane rivals SuperSport United 2-0 in Atteridgeville, where Sibusiso Vilakazi opened the season for us with a stunning left-foot strike from outside the box. Now, if you want the rest of those results, plus all the reaction, analysis, match reports, and breaking news, you have to go to timeslive.co.za, sowetanlive.co.za, as well as bdlive.co.za.
Guns, an essential tool in self-protection or a catalyst for criminality. CliffCentral.com presents Guncast, a podcast that unpacks the divisive issue of gun ownership in South Africa. Join legal expert Martin Hood as he hosts a series of talks with both sides of the gun lobby. Whether you support the right to carry guns or you believe they're a destructive tool that society could do without, Guncast will enlighten and challenge you in equal measure. Find Guncast now on the Cliff Central app, on CliffCentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, we will also have some of the best Tiso Black Star football journalists coming into studio to chat all things football in a short while. We'll be taking a deep dive into the new Premier Soccer League season. Later on, we will also check in with the English Premier League, which also begins this weekend. I am absolutely pumped. My team Chelsea has shown great form in preseason, but the real thing is about to begin. Before we get to the football extravaganza, however, there's been some news on the cricket front. Proteas coach Otis Gibson has been let go. The West Indian will not continue in his role as head coach of the men's national team. In fact, there have been so many dramatic changes in cricket over the past week alone that Gibson's position doesn't even exist anymore. Yeah, you heard that right. That position is now defunct. A new structure is coming into play. A director of cricket will be appointed in the coming months, as well as a team director. Now, the director of cricket will oversee all national teams, men, women, youth teams, etc. The team director will now become a hybrid between what used to be the Proteas head coach and the Proteas team manager. The team manager will report directly to the director of cricket. That position is currently being held in an acting role by Corey Fonsale, who is also the head of cricketing pathways. So Corey is kind of wearing many hats at the moment. And the director of cricket will be filled in an interim basis by an unknown person so far who will lead South Africa to the tour of India. We don't know if that will also be Corey Fonsale. At the moment, he seems to be doing everything, and he said at a press conference on Tuesday that there are people congratulating him for being the new Proteas head coach. And that, of course, is not the case. The former team manager, however, Doc Musaji, who was also the team doctor, has also vacated both his roles with Cricket South Africa. Now, I know it's a lot to take in, but let's let Cricket South Africa CEO Thabang Moret do a little explaining as to what in the world is going on in cricket.
I'm Thabang Moret from News 24. It's my understanding that at a popular meeting in February, the CSA board proposed that the CEO would have the final say on team selections moving forward, and that plan was squashed before the World Cup. Moving forward, can we have guarantees that won't be the case, or might that be something that the CEO revisits?
So that policy has always been there. It wasn't something new. What's happened was that we haven't managed to reach our transformational targets in the past. So we didn't reach them again, in the previous year. And obviously with us not being able to reach the targets that we set for ourselves, it concerned the board. And then obviously we'd have to now go back as senior management and some board members to go to the minister to explain why this hasn't happened, to see the EPG panel and explain why we find ourselves in a picture that we would be at the time. And given that the board was concerned, the board then spoke about maybe activating this policy, which was in place already. A couple of names were mooted in the meeting in terms of who should have the sign off. So it's not the final say. Is to have a sign off on the final 11 that goes onto the field with the view of looking at the targets that have been set at that needs to be achieved at the end of the year. So essentially the thinking is that the selector will have his own team that he wishes to select. How that team looks demographically, it's not my problem as a CEO. I would sign off that team irrespective of how it looks. But I would sign it off based on the fact that I would have communicated with him that you need to understand that if you look down the road, this is now what you need to do to get to that final mark. So essentially what happens is that if I sign off every team and then at the end of the season we haven't reached those targets, the board then held me accountable. My job is just to continue to remind the convener that if you've selected a team that looks like this, this is what it means. If the next match comes and you select a team that looks like this, the target has changed. This is now what it means for you going forward. So essentially, that's what it meant. It didn't mean that the CEO would be selecting.
So moving forward, that'll remain what happens. You won't be involved in selecting teams.
So as things stand, the board has decided to put that policy on ice. So no, we will not be actioning it unless the board then says from an EPG point of view, we want to now activate it because, as most of you, or some of you might know, we are now being asked to project for the next 10 years. And as you can imagine, it's a very difficult job to do, given that cricket does not have the right to have substitutes that are counted, so to speak,
sorry,
like other sports.
I can just grab one more.
Okay, one last one.
So, Mike, just on, if we can wrap up Otis and those discussions and how that ended. It's also understanding that earlier in the year, in February, it was an agreement in principle that he would have his contract extended to April 2021. If you can just give us an idea of what the talks were with you and Otis from that point up until the World Cup, and what his thinking was going into the World Cup in terms of what he needed to achieve.
Sure. So I basically went to the board. I first spoke with Otis, and I said to Otis, I would like to suggest that the board have a look at your contract and with a possible extension. And then Otis responded by saying that he would more or less look at being employed until probably 2021, and that's what I should suggest to the board, rather. I did suggest that to the board. The board deliberated on that. And part of the board agreeing, or what the board essentially said to me, let me rather quote what was said to me verbatim, was, we are agreeing that you can go ahead as you and extend the coach's contract, subject to him agreeing to key specific pointers in his contract changing. Part of that being EPG, part of that being communication, part of that being performance. We went back to the coach together with the now acting director of cricket and communicated such to the coach, of which he said he could not immediately agree until he saw what his contract looked like. Now, that meeting is essentially the same meeting where this policy was of selection was spoken of. And obviously, it is well documented now in the media that the coach was not really happy about the board rather wanting to now activate this policy. And in fact, this policy was in place for 3 days. So it's not later on in the year. It's literally 3 days. The 1st of February meeting, I think, was on a Friday evening. And on a Monday evening, the president called me and said, listen, Taban, I've had a chat with a few guys as far as the team's concerned. And we're thinking of putting this policy on ice. Would you mind if we do that? And I said, no, there's absolutely no reason why I would mind in the board putting this policy on ice, because the perception that was already put out there was that the board, together with the CEO, is intending on interfering on selection, which wasn't true. So to dispel such notions or rumors, we just simply put the policy on ice. So similarly, with Otis not agreeing, that's one of the decisions, again, that came, that emanated from that meeting that caused the board to then say, listen, because the coach is not agreeable to a few things that you're already saying, let's rather put his contract on ice as well and judge him the same way that we said we would from the first on, which is on his performances at the World Cup.
Right, let's get this football special up and running. With me in studio is Tiso Blackstar, sports journalist, an authority on all things football. Yeah, Mark Stryker Stratum is back with us in the country, and he'll be discussing all things Disky, all things the new Premier Soccer League season. It was an exciting start. I don't know, is it more exciting than your wee trip to Egypt, Mark?
Spoo, wow, thanks for calling me an authority. Makes me feel nice. More exciting than Egypt? No, of okay. course not. But... far less of it's in no way a letdown either. I mean the first game I went and covered, Pirates Celtic, was great. I enjoyed it, and so that makes it, you know, obviously coming back from like AFCON, which is a high, coming back to PSL, you would think would be a bit of a, but it's not a come down. The standard of our games is good.
I loved it. But let's not get into the main course just yet. It's been a crazy week in South African sport. We were just smarting, or some people were smarting, after Stuart Baxter resigned in what I could only have called the most picturesque resignation in South African football history. I mean, Kilani Country Club, Houghton, Johannesburg, lofty surrounds, birds chirping, the sun was out. But that belied the sort of tension that was inside the country club at the press conference with Stuart Baxter. Ultimately, put the gun to his own temple and ended what has been a very another one of those topsy-turvy coaching appointments. I think it's the last time we'll see Baxter in a Bafana coaching role. It seemed final. This time around. But what did you make of the way he conducted himself in this resignation, and how he somewhat blindsided the SAFA, the organization, in his approach?
No, that was weird. It was very strange to... I've never seen a Bafana coach call his own press conference SAFA.
Right.
People were trying to call SAFA the day before and say, you know, do you know what this coach is saying? And they said, no, we have no idea. And, you know, there was a technical committee meeting the next day where they wanted Baxter to be there on Saturday, you know, to give a verbal report back on his report, his written report on the AFCON.
So that was supposed to have taken place the day after that press conference?
I don't know if it was scheduled, but they were sort of complaining the next day, the technical committee, that, okay, now we don't even have Baxter to be here and give us... verbal feedback when we've got questions on what his written report might be. It was strange. It was very strange. But I think Stuart, he clearly, I mean, the question wasn't asked at the press conference. Maybe it should have been. But he clearly wanted to do things on his own terms, on his own turf, away from SAFA House for some reason. And that gives a big hint that obviously he must have been a bit dissatisfied with the association. And I think that says a lot on its own. And he had Russell Paul. Again, that's strange. He calls a privately called press conference arranged by his agent, Steve Kapelusznik. And the acting CEO of SAFA, Russell Paul, is there, which is also weird. But I guess he had to be if Stuart was announcing what he was announcing. I don't know when Russell was briefed on.
Probably 5 minutes before.
It'll be interesting to ask, And was he sent the SMS driving on his way there?
So he had to do a quick turnaround from Nasrec. make a quick, you know, left towards Kilani.
It's a strange way of doing things, but and then Stuart didn't overtly kind of say. He just said he felt he couldn't continue in the job, and there's a lot of factors in that. And he didn't just simply blame SAFA for that. One felt he maybe held a lot back of what he wanted to say about SAFA. I think especially on the preparations for AFCON. I mean, we found out since AFCON, during AFCON, that SAFA didn't want to pay for one of the teams playing in the CASAFA Cup in Durban once they were finished or had been knocked out or eliminated to come to Joburg as part of Bafana's training camp in Joburg where they wanted a friendly in Joburg, but they hadn't managed to organize one, but they could have got one of those CASAFA teams, but SAFA didn't want to pay for the flight and hotel. And I mean, that when you're going to an AFCON is horrendous. But the two, I don't think Stuart's blameless either, because apparently SAFA could have lined up Egypt as a pre-tournament friendly in Egypt just before the tournament ends, and Stuart apparently didn't want to affect confidence in case the team, and that seems
seems so petty in the context of what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, test yourself against the best. I mean, they were playing Ghana, and that Ghana game was such a training game, and because that ended up being the only friendly, he basically had to play an entire different starting 11 in two halves. It ended up being a complete training game. Farce. There's no competitiveness in that kind of game. And you can see it in the group stage. So
so we were undercooked, but okay, Baxter not blameless. I guess the press conference, the lone wolf press conference, which ended up, you had Dominic Chimavi there, who's the spokesperson at SAFA as well. What did it tell you about the discord though between their head coach, their flagship team's head coach? You know, going rogue. Against the organization.
Yeah, no. it certainly shows. I think it just shows that he's unhappy. And but I think Stuart. I don't know. I guess he just wanted it. I don't know how much time he spends at Kalani Country Club. I know Stuart's an avid golfer. I've sometimes heard about his. But his first term in charge of Bafana, that he spent actually too much time on the golf course. I don't know about the second term. I think there were times, given how up and down, we seemed so well prepared against the bigger teams and the smaller teams. So maybe there's something in that even that you can read.
Maybe. I mean, was it the Seychelles where players went to the beach? Not to say that you can't go to the beach when you're in the Seychelles, granted. Yeah. But you better come back with the result from there.
Yeah, exactly. Come back with the result.
So that sort of beach attitude after a 6-0 victory showed kind of how the complacency could easily come in after riding a high.
I think the down... Yeah, look, players must have downtime, but then those pictures backfire when you lose.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing,
just
though.
Just looks bad.
It does. It looks terrible.
Yeah. I just think, and that maybe... Like, Stuart's unhappy with the association.
Yeah.
But you contrast him to the coach of Madagascar, who hasn't been paid, I think, in, I don't know, 6 months? I forget now.
Christ.
Who loves his job.
Okay, you're not going to get that with Baxter.
Yeah, we're not Madagascar. We should.
Yeah.
But we're even hearing things about him not having, being owed some money, and that hasn't been confirmed.
Okay.
But, we're not Madagascar, and we have a different infrastructure, and you should expect more from South Africa. But the passion that Madagascar coach has just to go and what he's done for Madagascar to qualify them for their first AFCON and actually be competitive, finish top of their group, amazing.
Beat Nigeria 2-0, the same Nigeria that knocked us out. Yeah,
and he hasn't been paid in 6 months. And Stuart...
Jeez.
And Baxter just has... He is a bit of a griper. And this is a problem. A bit is an understatement. It is one of his downfalls. And he's finicky, and and I think that to some extent does rub off on the players.
Yeah.
And so this press conference, it was strange that it wasn't at SAFA House, but it's kind of in keeping with Stuart's kind of gripey. And he has some legitimate concerns, but... So does SAFA have with him. So
yeah.
It's both ways.
I want to touch a bit on SAFA now because at the end of the day, no matter who coaches Bafana, we are stuck with SAFA, the federation. Mm. We're stuck with what is a very archaic institution, very amateur era structures and way of doing things. And Baxter, I had a chat with Baxter while he was still at SuperSport, and the fires of him becoming the new coach were very, very hot at the time. Mm. And he said that if he were to take it would be under the premise of a long-term view, you know. So I think he knew when we spoke that, okay, he's in the front running, even though he wasn't part of the original technical panels. He wasn't even on their recommendations. Mm. I mean, so which then started his tenure on the back foot. But his intentions, I think, were good in that he wanted SAFA to break out of the short-termism there, you know, to eventually do things right. And I'll put that in inverted commas because...
Yeah.
Doing the right thing is subjective, but he really wanted to make sure that there's a pathway between start and finish.
Yeah.
But by the end, he was so narrow in his focus, and I think that pressure was organizational pressure that he forgot in his own plans, couldn't implement any of it. And I know he was criticized for not involving any under 23, under 20 players or under 17 players, all of whom had made World Cups at various levels, junior World Cups at various levels. But how do you do that when what the results comes out is you're not going to get a free pass if you play Luther Singh or any of the other promising youngsters? How is he even going to be able to live up to Vision 2022 if one group stage bad performance at AFCON is a determining factor over a 4-year, 5-year term?
Yeah, and also further than that, it was a poor group stage, horrendous in terms of football played. But then we beat Egypt with one of our possibly the best performance in 20 years.
Mm.
And he still gets vented at when he gets back to OR Tambo Airport. And, you know, so even though you had a result that nullified that poor group stage, there's something about Stuart that he has this reaction on South Africans that they just, a lot of South Africans, not all.
He draws the
just
air.
Want to be angry at it no matter what.
Yeah, yeah.
So that does add pressure as well. But this is what we've seen with all Bafana coaches. We saw it with Sheikh Mashaba, who tried to bring in a new invigoration of injecting youth and
went unbeaten in the qualifiers.
The moment Sheikhs got under pressure, he abandoned that. And that whole idea of bringing in 20-year-olds and Fakhri Lakhaz, Rivaldo was still there because he was good enough. But he no longer brought in these 20-year-olds. And I think this is, I think it's got to do with expectation. It's like I say about... We go on and on about in South Africa about how poor our football is. We talk about it almost, you know, it's a Pavlov's dog spiral of negativity.
Mm.
And I don't think it's as bad as what people say. Then the moment we qualify for an AFCON, I was discussing this on another vlog, I think, last night. So it's quite, I'm just trying to remember. You have that spiral of negativity, and then on the other, and you remember with the Libya qualifier.
Yes.
A lot of people are saying, I'm not even going to watch. There's no way Bafana are going to win.
Going to beat Libya. And no we go way. There, absolutely, and we play the no way. Perfect
We had a
game.
Great game, and then we qualify, and then we go from that, where people are saying, Bafana is so useless. We qualify, and then people are saying, we've got to reach the final, nothing less. And how do you square the two? How do you square that?
There's no middle ground.
How do you square that our football is so poor that we don't have the players of the 1980s? Mm. Okay, we don't. And how do you square that where the moment we qualify, where every game we play is, except for the one against Namibia, we're the clear underdog. They have players of Ivory Coast, Morocco, on paper, have players of a much better quality than
Nicolas us. Nicolas Pepe just signed for £72 million at Arsenal.
Exactly. We've got Percy Tau, who's an amazing player, who's just scored on debut at Club Bruges. But it's £72 million. So we are the underdog in every single game we play. And how do you square that we are that underdog, and then we're exposed to play expansive football?
Yeah.
You can't. We've got to be more tight-knit than those teams. Our strength is that we have a lot of PSL-based players, and we've got to be tight-knit, and we've got to be better organized than them. And that is actually what we learned from this AFCON. And the only thing was Stuart put too much emphasis in too many games, except for the Egypt one, on structure, and didn't do enough freedom in attack. And that was his downfall. But actually, it's our best AFCON since 2002. And we've got to get our balance between slamming our football and then having absurd expectations. We've got to find a middle ground in terms of both the media and I think the public, because I think it makes life difficult for every single Bafana coach. They can't last more, for more than 2 years. And it becomes too much pressure to satisfy those expectations.
Is this team uncoachable? I know Mulefitzek is the interim coach now, but like I think like Jesus Christ will have to come down and coach Bafana. That's the only day. And even then, I don't think.
Jesus Christ, Pep Guardiola, same thing.
You know, same thing.
I don't think it's uncoachable sport, and I think there's signs of progress. I think the fact is that this was our best statistically.
No, I don't mean in the sense that we can't get results out of these players. No, for sure, we can get some good results out of these players. We've got a good crop of players, man. I'm not pessimistic about our quality of footballer at all, but regardless of the upsurge of quality that we have in the personnel that you've mentioned, are we never going to let a coach just do his job and finish his job?
Yeah, and I see what you mean. Because we could bring in Pizzo, if we could pry Pizzo from Sundowns.
Mm.
But then you've got Chiefs and Pirates fans not happy because Pizzo has humiliated their teams on so often at club level. Mm. And you know, the first few, I don't know, it's like a coach has to win every game or there's, you know...
Mm.
Look, and with Stuart, he had some really poor results, like the Seychelles, like the Cape Verde.
Mm.
That didn't help him. And then he just had the thing with South Africans that they just don't like him.
Yeah.
I think we can have a coach who can succeed. I think the right coach. We also keep going for cheap options.
So who's the right coach?
And the right coach right now is Pizzo. And because of what he's done at Champions League level, it's only... the fact that Safa don't really have money and he's getting paid exceptionally well at Sundowns, as far as we know.
Would there ever be a chance where he occupies both roles?
I think there is a chance of that.
Without his house getting burned down by Chiefs and Pirates fans.
Yeah, jeez. I mean, the difficult thing then is the conflict of interest.
That's 80% of the football market is Chiefs and Pirates fans.
Yeah, and then he selects 8 Sundowns players legitimately because Sundowns are the best club in the country. But Chiefs and Pirates go mad. But I think it is possible. He's a good enough coach. He's a workaholic. He's already a workaholic on what he does at Sundowns, but he's such a workaholic, he could accommodate Bafana into that work regime. I think it is possible. I think he could do it. He's that good a coach. And I just think, for me, what you entice him with is that if Stuart Baxter could reach a semi-final, could close to getting to the semi-final.
Yeah,
And Stuart is a decent coach. And then if you brought Pizzo with his pedigree in Africa and having won a Champions League,
he's
the only South African coach who is feared across the continent, who when you go to Egypt, Egyptians say to him, when are you coming to work here with Zamalek and Al Ahly? I mean, that's unheard of.
That's incredible.
No other South African coach has that. So you bring him, and the next Nations Cup is actually possibly there to be won with Pizzo Mosimane as coach. And that would elevate Pizzo from being a coach feared across Africa to among... The top world. Notch African coaches and globally known, like Herve Reinaerts. And so that is how you possibly appeal to Pizzo. It's difficult.
Would he take it?
And
though?
I think
Would
Pizzo he... could last, but we've got to also just temper our expectations and stop knocking South African football and how poor it is. Mm. Because it's not as bad as people say.
It's also not as great.
Nowhere near as crazily good as we must win every competition we get into. But a quarterfinal is something to build on. Beating Egypt, the hosts.
That's unbelievable. Huge, man.
Is something
Egypt,
to build on.
The hosts of the actual tournament.
We can now go into qualifiers not fearing anyone. We don't. We've beaten Nigeria in Nigeria.
Monkey is off our backs.
And Stuart had a very mixed bag tenure, but that is his legacy in those two results, which started with his predecessor, Sheikh Mashaba, when he also went to Nigeria, was 2-0 up. He broke that mystique about Nigeria, and Stuart carried that on. And so we are showing signs of progress. And I do think, if he brought Pizzo, he could succeed, and we could win an AFCON.
Right, let's jump straight to the PSL action that was this weekend. Mm. Obviously impossible to watch every game. Mm. I mean, they'll just have to go and look for your writing online. But great start for the big three. is what I took out of it. Kaizer Chiefs,
yeah,
3-2 against sure. Highlands Park.
Mm.
I like the comeback of who's a former Polokwane City striker, Rodney Ramagalela.
Yeah, Ramagina.
Yeah, Ramagina. I love that guy, man. He's like a blue collar striker for me. I love those kind of guys. Lebo Manyama, obviously previously the South African Player of the Year, UPSA Premiership Player of the Year.
Mm.
Quality football, obviously. Mm-hmm. He's shown that. Vilakazi, a fully fit Sibusiso Vilakazi, is a thing of beauty.
Yeah, for what me. A goal.
What a goal. What a left foot.
No VAR.
But it was a goal.
They got it right.
And Pirates. Pirates.
Pirates are good.
Dark horse
Pirates are
for
scary,
the league.
Man.
Pirates a dark horse for this league.
They're more than a dark horse. They're top two contender.
You think
contender.
They got the inside lane?
They're not inside lane, but they're top two contender as they have been for the past two seasons, but stronger. Mm. And the past two seasons, they've closed the gap from 5 points as runners-up to Sundowns to 2 points as runners-up to Sundowns.
Yeah, to the last
game. And this season, they're gunning for it. And, okay, so yeah, like you say, a good start for the big three. Mm. Sundowns convincing against SuperSport. I mean, Tshwane Derby, that convincing, impressive. The big thing with Sundowns is last season, they played two Champions Leagues and they had to rebuild. This season, they've had their first rest in 5 years because of the restructuring of the CAF calendar, and that rebuilding is now done.
Yeah.
So they are scary. Then you've got Pirates, so hungry. Micho hasn't won a trophy yet. Mm. They haven't won a league title since 2012, so that hunger can maybe make a difference. Chiefs, good start for them. I don't know that they're league title contenders, but certainly they're a heck of a lot better than people probably were thinking. And a result against Highlands Park away.
Without Kama Billiard.
Without Kama Billiard, interestingly. Mm. Highlands, everyone knows, all the big teams struggle going there.
Mm.
So I think a 3-2 was an excellent result for them starting. There's teething problems like their defense, but Chiefs have... what Middendorp's been saying about the fact that, you know, they've got unknown signings. Mm. But they actually look good. That Nurkovic looked good. Backus looked good. Mm. But also what he's been saying about the squad that's there, that he had so many injuries last season that are now back. Like you say, Manyama, Kune coming back in August.
It's almost like signing new players.
Yeah,
actually.
And to see Matoho play a game and come through really decently. Yeah. And Matoho has been absent for 2 years.
Yeah.
Those are like new signings. So Chiefs are nowhere near as bad as people think.
Okay.
They can be up there. I don't know about league title challenges. We'll see.
Right. Other impressive results. Golden Arrows. Steve Compella's Golden Arrows. They snuck a 1-0 over Maritzburg. Of a sluggish game.
Yeah, Tshwane Derby. They're often very not easy to watch.
KZN Derby.
KZN Derby.
Yeah, they're a hard watch. Now the Premier League for the UPSA Premiership for these punch above your weight teams. I'll put Cape Town City there, who pissed away a 2-goal advantage at Baraka.
Mm.
Do you think it's there's more quality sort of in the middle of the log? For instance, like you look at the City team, who are more high end middle than low end middle, because of Abubakar Mubara's coming in.
Mm.
You know, the Mpoma Colas and the strengthening they've done. Mentioned Highlands Park pushing Kaizer Chiefs. Do you think if those guys, you know, bring some surprises, it makes the league more entertaining?
Oh no, it totally does. In fact, City for me are better than high end. They're the dark horses actually.
Oh, you reckon? Okay.
With the signings they've made, their first game, yeah, like you say, I mean, blowing 2-0, that's not good.
They had Nora Dean,
but they were playing away,
yeah.
And Benny was still suspended and not on the bench, so that might have played a role.
Okay.
They finished fourth last season. Mm. They've made very good signings. They're very ambitious, and Benny McCarthy's growing in confidence.
Mm.
I think it does. Like Highlands, like you say, I mean, they were such a tough team to play at Makalong last season.
Yeah.
They finished eighth as a promoted team. Excellent first season, and with Ramaji coming in.
Ah, oh, man, Ramaji. That's my G.
Pizza was saying the other day, and Pizza's ex-striker. He knows that there's not a lot of South Africans who hit the ball. cleanly. Ramaji is one. He can hit the ball cleanly, and like he's had two frustrating seasons. He's hungry.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think these teams will definitely. There's no weak teams. Stellenbosch, you know, they maybe it's come a bit early for them promotion, but
okay.
I think for a first division champion team, keeping the combination together mostly and adding some experience like Morgan Gold and Mark van Heerden. When you keep that combination together, you keep your spirits of that team that you won the league, even if it was in the first division, rather than stripping the whole team
and firing the coach and getting rid of everybody.
It's an insanely competitive league where anyone can beat anyone on the day.
We've seen interesting development where Mogakolo Dingele has appeared at Black Leopards. How do you think he will do? I mean, he was frustrated out at Sundowns, who I think was a quality player, maybe not a Bito kind of player, not a workaholic. I think Bito likes his forward players to be workaholics. Your Mabowes, they scrap for the ball, even though they play high. Even playing Sibusiso Vilakazi, he still has to do something while he's up there, even though he's a more creative player. Temba Zwane, one of the best workhorses you've got there. So, what do you think of Ngele appearing there at Black Leopards?
It's make or break for him. I think, because he also, I think, has had a little bit of off-field kind of disciplinary.
Oh, you reckon?
A little bit. Drifted away. And then, he hasn't played for years.
He hasn't.
But he's a very, very good player. What he did at Platinum Stars to get signed by Sundowns. I think if he can get himself right, get himself fit, absolutely a great player. And, it'll be interesting to see him.
Tusopala. Then swan song now.
Yeah, he is winding down, but he's still Tusopala is always good. He gives you something. He's got that, still got pace. Can score. Another one who hits the ball well. It is a swan song, but he's never every season he keeps going.
Cool. Yeah. All right, Marky Mark, let's wrap it up. I want to let you do the upset of the week, but I fear you might have not watched any Currie Cup rugby over the last weekend. So let me administer this one. The Griquas beat the Bulls at 37-15 at Loftus. The Pumas beat the Sharks 27-20 in Nelspruit. I think I'm going to give it to... I'm going to edge that one, actually, to the Pumas because they had a tighter game and the Griquas are top of the Currie Cup log at the moment. Not something I thought you probably thought you'd hear. They're looking good to win the Currie Cup.
The Bulls fallen that far from even losing at home, that isn't the upset of the week.
To the mighty Griquas, I'll tell you that for free. Now, give me Playmaker of the Week. This is right up your alley. Lebohang Manyama for his brace against Highlands Park. Sibusiso Vilakazi for that goal against SuperSport United, or Stephen Smith for two centuries that won the first Ashes Test against England at Edgbaston, 144 and 142.
Wow, and there was a low-scoring game.
It was.
So I'll give it to Stephen Smith.
Well done. That's amazing. All right,
it to a cricketer, wow.
You gave it to a cricketer, I didn't expect that. Well done, Marky Mark. All right, that wraps up this episode of the Sports Live Podcast. Thanks, Marky.
Sure, Spoo. Always fun.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course, have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
To advertise on the Sports Live podcast, email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Now, I can't wait till I say this is the Sports Live podcast brought to you by this is your name, your entity, your brand right after the Sports Live podcast. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Smith S, SMITHS at TISOBLACKSTAR.co.za. That's it from me, Sboom Jikeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the SportsLive podcast, it's goodbye for now.